Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We are back. A happy 4th of July to Mike Lombardi and the family. How was it? What did you guys do? Ocean City was beautiful, right?
It was unbelievable. Just a lot of barbecue and, you know, a lot of hanging out, a lot of chill, a lot of front porch living. That's the thing. I think that's the thing you got to do down at the Jersey Shore is a little front porch living.
But it's critical to do it now, right? Because if you don't do it now, you go, oh my God, the summer's already gone. It doesn't feel like summer until beach, front porch living, watermelon, barbecue. You got to hit all those. Little frisbee.
And in the NFL, it's over. Like, my two sons are going to go back to work here soon. I mean, everybody's headed back. So it's like the summer's over. You know, once you get around the, you know, there's the, you know, George Young used to say he would never negotiate contracts until Bastille Day. You know, only George Young, the great philosopher, former history teacher.
Right. Love's a good for France Day with Bastille Day.
Who even knows what Bastille Day is? Most of these kids today. But typically around Bastille Day, you get that itch to say, hey, it's time to go back. But I thought 4th of July was, you know, we had a parade in front of the house, which was great. All the kids on their bicycles, which was kind of neat, honoring America and raising the flag. So it was fun. And you know, the NBA kept me entertained for that while.
That's very cool. I'm here in Wisconsin visiting my brother Franklin, to be specific, just outside Milwaukee. This is the heartland, man. You got cheese curds, you got brats. They can't wait. They love their Packers here. You know that firsthand.
Oh, that's amazing. When I was in Lake Geneva, it was hilarious because it's right there on the border. So you had a lot of Bears fans from Chicago coming up, and then you had that Green Bay Mafia there, that those people, they're just, you know, it's amazing. We were driving, we checked the bags, and Gate checked the bags, right? And this is a great Wisconsin story, right?
I love it.
So we checked the bags at the gate, and then we get off the plane, and Millie and I both grab the wrong bag. All right, so now we go and we realize that we go back to the gate. I get my right bag. I exchange it with somebody else. Millie doesn't get her bag. So we go down to the ticket counter and the lady's like, don't worry, somebody will show up with your bag. Well, the problem was all of her Super Bowl jewelry and everything was in the bag.
Ooh.
Not replaceable. So we wait 3 hours at the airport. Finally, she's in tears. It's brutal, right? So we go, and then we go back, and the lady says, look, he'll show up eventually. So we drive to Lake Geneva, which is about an hour away, right? Mm-hmm. And Millie's like, there's no way this guy's going to bring. He's going to see all the jewelry in there, and it's over with. It's like, and I'm thinking, and as I'm driving, I'm saying, you don't realize these people in Wisconsin are really good people. Somebody's going to find that bag and bring it back, you know? Yeah. We actually go to we go to TG Maxx, buy a whole new wardrobe because she thinks there's no chance, right?
Right.
In 20 minutes, she has a whole new wardrobe, which is remarkable. I mean, I'm putting shit in the bag. She's throwing it out. It's like unbelievable. But anyway, and then at 6 o'clock at dinner, I get a phone call. Your bag's back. The lady at the airport FaceTimes me to show me the jewelry's in there.
Yes, a FaceTime is classic.
And then they deliver the bag.
Not one thing missing. Not one piece of jewelry.
Nothing.
Not one ring. Not one.
Nothing. That's Wisconsin.
I was going to say, Minnesota's nice, Wisconsin even nicer.
Right.
With that, we move on to some of the news percolating right now. This jumped out to you. Carl Lawson's comments, the Bengals defensive end, who's trying to rehab from an ACL, says he'll play. It's about 9 months removed from the ACL, said that Aaron Rodgers easy to sack. Just throwing bombs, the Packers quarterback right now.
You know, I think what he's saying is that he holds the ball longer than perhaps he should. See, I think this is going to be the issue with him is are they going to get him to change into a rhythm? He wants to wait for the big play. He's holding that ball, you know, and most guys would. I think you can see, guys, when you look at quarterbacks eye level and when their yards per attempt start to dwindle down, like Eli's. Mm-hmm. You know, when it starts to slowly, their eye level's coming down. Rodgers' eye level has not come down, but he's not going to change what he does. But like Lawson said in that report, hey, unless you do it for four quarters, he's going to come back because he's one of those guys that no matter what happens, the punches don't get to him.
Right. And there's a quarterback in transition. Speaking of quarterbacks in transition, Eli Manning says he wants to keep playing. He's 38 years of age, doesn't want to get pushed out the door. But Peyton Manning, his brother, who could have been in the Monday Night Football booth, turned it down, according to Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports, because he didn't want to analyze his brother. The Giants and the Broncos on the Monday Night Football schedule. And apparently Peyton was like, listen, I can't be honest and critique my brother. Maybe give it a few years if I still have that interest. I think that's honorable of Peyton. It seems like a human tendency, right? Who right. wants to break down their brother, especially his brother isn't very good right now.
Right. And I mean, you got to give Peyton credit. Like he can't say what he really wants to say.
Right.
I mean, you got to, you know, as they said in The Godfather, it's between the brothers, Kay. It's between the
brothers.
It's between
imagine,
the brothers.
If he was actually critical of him, well, then, I mean, that's you're insulting your brother on national television. And right. if you don't do it, then you're a fraud. You're not very good at your job because you're not willing to be honest yeah. and candid.
I mean, no, and I'm sure Peyton probably got on a plane with his little cherry bow tie and went back to Sicily and said, you know, like Vito Pantangia did, you know, it's between the brothers.
Yeah, exactly. Also, this is a story we've been following for a while. Ezekiel Elliott is not going to be punished by the NFL as Roger Goodell deems it was no personal conduct policy violated in that Vegas incident. That in a vacuum isn't interesting, but we're still waiting for the verdict coming down on another player we've been following for a while.
Yeah,
right?
Tyreek Hill, July 9th now. I think tomorrow, a Thursday, will be 10 weeks since the draft. We've heard nothing, right? And I don't see how he can come back with no verdict. There's just no chance. There's going to have to be some kind of verdict. There's going to have to be some kind of way to where Goodell views this as a negative light, because it truly is a negative light on him. I mean, there's no chance he can. Now, we can debate 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 games, but it is a negative light.
Any possible excuse you could give Goodell for not having given a punishment so far?
I can't imagine one. I think it's, you know, Goodell has it in his hip pocket that says, hey, look, you know, I've got the right if you've embarrassed the league. And I think that this kid has skirted the issue enough to where he's embarrassed the league and he has never paid a price for it. You know, the fascinating thing is going to be is, do you think the Chiefs will really give him a contract?
Well, this is the craziest thing with the Chiefs. They, more than any other team, Mike, you know, are willing to give second, third, fourth chances. I think they're the type that go, oh, 4-game suspension? Okay, we can play the other 12, right? Awesome. Let's sign him up. I really do. Like, they're crazy.
How do you justify your cash? One thing I know about owners, they like their cash. Like, how do you justify the cash? Like, I don't understand how you can do that.
All right, unless you think he's that productive a player, he's that game-breaking an offensive dynamo that it's worth it. But I'm with you. I don't think financially or the public opinion of it. I mean, God, I mean, I don't know if you'd boycott it necessarily, but fans aren't going to like the guy.
I mean, the public opinion doesn't seem to sway. I mean, there's enough red in Kansas City. It looks like the Soviet Union. It looks like Moscow. I mean, so, I mean, you walk in there, you know, and they got a pretty easy schedule to start their season. I mean, if he gets suspended the first four games, I don't think it's going to be that disabling for them.
Right. That could be interesting. Couple of serious topics where we get to what I really want to hear from Mike, which is NFL coaches rating. This is going to be very interesting as you break down the best. But here's a couple of sobering stories here, Mike. First off, Kendrick Norton, the Miami defensive tackle, he lost his arm after a car crash. He was selected in the 7th round of the draft by Carolina. He's signed by Miami in December. He's yet to play in the NFL, but when you hear a guy amputated arm, it's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking. And unfortunately, in this situation where people don't realize the rules, because this injury occurred outside of football, it's deemed a non-football related injury, which then means that the Dolphins are not liable for anything that's happened. Now, I'm sure the Dolphins will handle the medical, but mm-hmm. in terms of that contract, like, they can't just say, okay, you're on IR and we're going to rehabilitate you. You know, the one thing that Belichick talks about all the time, he calls it the trifecta, right? Mm-hmm. Before the team goes away, and Belichick talks about this all year long, all seasons, he calls it the trifecta. And the trifecta is women, alcohol, and assholes. Okay? And when you get the trifecta together, women, alcohol, and assholes, you're going to get in trouble. Now, you could probably say you could add dope in there. You could add marijuana in there. You get those four things in one area. Is he the fucking trifecta? Okay. You got the fucking trifecta out there today.
And the better question is, which one of the three is like the most inciting? Like, which one's the instigator with those three? Like, you can have alcohol and assholes, but if you get women involved.
I would say the tone of his voice trails deeper on assholes. Fucking assholes. But it's hilarious. He's educating them on exactly what's going to happen. Like, you know how many times I've heard him say, look, the trifecta's out there. Because, you know, we're sitting there in Gillette Stadium, and say there's a Taylor Swift concert, right? Yeah. Okay, the trifecta's in full force here today, you know? And, you know, and it's not like the players are looking for it, but that asshole is going to try to instill something. And then there's alcohol, which makes people tougher. And then, of course, women, which we've known over the last since time, and as Tony Soprano would say, since time immemorial, has caused problems, right? So, I mean, you get those three things together, and unfortunately, this poor kid, you know, I'm not saying he was doing anything with the trifecta, but, you know, but that's what happens, and that's what you're worried about. I mean, basically, next week, people go back to work. Most teams will go back, I think, next Thursday or Friday, and then at least, you know, you feel like, okay, we can control the situation, and we can manage it, and hopefully nothing happens between then and now.
Can you play without an arm? Not to sound indelicate, but is that possible?
I don't see how a defensive lineman could. Now, the Griffin brother is playing without a hand, you know, out in Seattle, but I don't think that's possible. I think this kid's obviously, you know, thankfully he's alive. I don't know the details of the accident, but at least he's alive, and you know, it's a tragedy that he's going to have to lose an opportunity to compete for a starting job. And, you know, but I think that's sad. Before we get going on the coaches' ratings, did you watch the women's soccer?
Unbelievable, yeah. The women's winning 2-0 over Netherlands, yeah.
Now, why do people make such a big deal out of the girl the way she celebrates? I'm missing this here completely.
Alex Morgan with the celebrating of the teacup. Yeah, I guess they thought that, you know, she was – I mean, she was throwing shade, as they would say in England, by sipping a cup of tea. But I'm with you. I don't think it was a big deal. Some people thought she would look like she was smoking weed, the way her fingers were. But she was pretending to sip a cup of tea when she scored that big goal against England. So Piers Morgan got upset.
Right. Yeah, I mean, really? Did he get upset? Do you watch that Piers Morgan? Well, he's on Good Day Britain, right? Him and that.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody really is caring about Piers Morgan getting mad. I don't know. I'm just happy we won. I mean, I thought it was awesome. And then how about your boy Joey Chestnut? Commentary on that?
Unbelievable. The hot dog eating was unreal. I mean, listen, it's come to this point, and I'm going to throw this out to you. If you think the all-time GOATs in any sports, if you say Brady, if you say Federer, if you say Tiger, Chestnut, in terms of the most dominating of his profession, you could make a case.
Yeah, I think they should. If I were Nathan's, I would come out with a Chestnut line of dogs, right?
A special bratwurst,
like,
or whatever.
My favorite thing to drink is Jack Daniels, because Sinatra loved Jack Daniels. He loved it. So Jack Daniels was smart. They made this thing called Sinatra Select, which is probably just Jack Daniels in a different bottle. But, but they charge you an arm and a leg for it. It's called.
But if you're a Frank fan, you're all in. Like, yeah, Sinatra.
I'm all in. I got four bottles. I'm up there. You know, that comes out no matter when. But, you know, and so you would think they would have like a Nathan's, like the Chestnut line, the upper echelon dog.
Yeah. That's right. Like, normally your cheap hot dog, Schneider's, whatever it is, you know, who really cares? But this is a good dog. Chestnut is a good champion hot dog.
Yeah, this man's eaten more hot dogs than you'll ever eat in your lifetime, and he thinks this is the greatest dog ever. Why wouldn't you buy that dog?
I agree. If you were starving with the bun, I think you and I mean, I don't know, 5 or 6 hot dogs? If you're really hungry,
no problem. You could kill them.
But without the bun, how many dogs do you think you could do? 12?
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, the bun, you know, the bun and the, oh, I just need mustard on them. Just put the mustard on them.
Yeah, Al Davis. I love it. All right. From Joey Chestnut, who is the best of the best when it comes to competitive eatings, the best coaches in football. NFL coaches rating. So I think let's go. You want to go top six, right? So go six. So you want to go 6-1?
Let me give a little background. Sure. When I was at the Eagles and Ray Rhodes was the head coach, we had Emmett Thomas as the defense coordinator, John Gruden as the offensive coordinator, and Danny Smith was the special teams. And I kept wondering, like, why could, you know, Ray really didn't do very much as a head coach. He kind of just came in and cursed to the team, you know, and gave, like, I mean, really some of the worst pep talks. Really, they were like, you would just say, oh, my God. You would like Terry.
In what respect? It was too negative, or it just wasn't inspiring? Or
it was too sexual. It was too. It was bad. It wasn't great.
That's awful.
It wasn't great, but it was his personality. So it fit. I mean, he was funny, but
Right.
And I got to. So when I went out to the Raiders, I got involved in with a professor out of Cal, and he was helping me kind of break down coaches. And because there's a power rating in coaches, when you think about it, you know. I write about this in my book. When Robert Evans took over Paramount, he basically eliminated, he started buying books as opposed to trying to hiring stars. Well, we're in this area where what staff matters. Back when Al Davis was dominating the 60s and 70s, he did it basically sheerly on players. I mean, Johnny Unitas never looked to the coach and wondered what the play was, right? So everything, mm-hmm. now everything's, it's chess on grass. So the head coach makes a huge difference. And so head coach, offensive coordinator, defense coordinator, O-line, D-line, those two coaches, and those six really make up the staff. Everybody else, you know, like, look, when you look at Dante Scarnecchi takes Trent Brown and turns him into this legitimate left tackle, make him the highest paid tackle in football, you know, you're saying, hey, that guy's, I mean, Dante's worth a lot of money, you know, but, and so is Belichick, who's controlling $180 million salary cap. And, you know, and if you paid Belichick $12 million a year, he's underpaid. That's the thing that's amazing about great head coaches. And that's why when you get a good coach, you better keep them. People disagree all the time, but I think when you see it. So anyway, the point of the story is I think you rank the coaches in groups, clusters of six.
Gotcha.
Right? One through six. And then it goes all the way down. Obviously, you can't rate the new coaches. But I'm only going to talk about what I think are the six top coaches. And it really isn't about winning percentage. To me, it's about where I think they can go. Now, what's fascinating is there's seven NFL head coaches currently in the league that have won Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that does mean something. I mean, look, Brian Billick won a Super Bowl, and he hasn't been able to get back in the league even though he's tried. So that does mean something. It unfortunately didn't work for Brian to get back. But so there's seven of those guys, and I think when you break it down, and then there's other guys that have appeared. So McVay's appeared, Dan Quinn's appeared, Ron Rivera's appeared, you know, and Andy Reid's appeared. There's four more that have appeared in Super Bowl. So that's 11 of the 32 coaches have been in Super Bowl contests before. But to me, I think you break it down. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the number one coach in the league is Belichick. There's nobody's going to debate that. But what's remarkable about Belichick is he's got 261 wins in the league, but his winning percentage in the playoffs is almost 75%. He has a higher winning percentage in the playoffs than he does in the regular season. Andy Reid is 12-14 come playoff time.
Wow.
So when it comes to difference, so you can't argue that. I think the debate becomes who's the second best head coach in the league. If you were drafting coaches, who would you draft second?
I like Sean Payton a lot. If I get a Sean Payton, I think he's a great coach. He's done it for a long time. Great offensive mind. Won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I'm right there. I had him rated number two. I think, you know, he's won 118 games. He's won a Super Bowl. He's 8-6 in the playoffs. His offense is always on the cutting edge. And I think, you know, the hard part is, like, we were going to talk about doing offensive and defensive coordinators, but some of these guys really, like, I know Pete Carmichael helps call plays, but dang, I mean, Sean Payton's running that offense just as much as anybody. So it's hard to really say that. So he would be my number two coach. Number three, I think Pete Carroll doesn't get enough credit for being a really good head coach.
That'd be my pick as well. Great defensive mind, won a Super Bowl. I think does more with less. Well liked by players, coaches him up well. Still youthful for his age. I agree. All those things.
I mean, you know, he's got 122 wins. He's 10-8 in the playoffs. He got fired in two jobs that he basically won in. I mean, he gets fired in. Imagine he's been fired for Rich Kotite and fired for Bill Belichick. Can you go to the opposite spectrums of the world? Think about that.
That one win season, one of the all-time worst, just a disaster.
If I were Pete Carroll in his study when he retires, he should probably have a picture of Belichick on the wall and Rich Kotite on the wall.
The highs and lows. Here are the guys that replaced me.
Like who was – that's got to be one of the great – who was fired for Rich Kotite? You know, like seriously. So I have him three. Then I got Andy Reid four. And I think Andy Reid, he's got 195 wins. Andy Reid's going to hit the 200 mark here this season. So he's got, but he's 12-14 in the playoffs. He's been 14 years in the league, and he's had 5 years where he didn't get to the playoffs. I mean, the guy, The guy produces good teams, right?
Yeah, the knock is going to be the playoff record, which you already mentioned, 12-14, but I'm with you. Listen, there's been times his teams haven't been very good and they've overachieved. And sometimes, it's not like the A's in baseball. Like, if your team doesn't perform well in the playoffs, that's not all on the coach. So I'm with you. If you're consistent, I mean, 200 wins, that's insane.
Right, and if he would just get somebody to help him with game management, just in play right. call, you know, if somebody would just help him, like, hey, Andy, I think you need to start the clock here. Hey, Andy, I think you need to do this here. It would be so much better for him. I don't understand how, as smart as he is and as creative as he is and the way he develops quarterback the way he does, how he can't quite grasp that. Like, yeah, I don't understand how he does. You know, the secret to all victory lies in the organization of the non-obvious. And you would think that a guy's had 195 wins can organize the non-obvious. But yet there's some obvious things that Andy can't do. And I don't know if he's ever going to overcome it. He just, to me, you know, it's a little bit of too many people tell him what they want to hear. And I think that's the problem.
Yeah. It's like everyone's got a blind spot. It's his blind spot.
All right. Who would be your next coach?
Well, this is where it gets interesting. Maybe Mike Tomlin with the Steelers because he's won a Super Bowl. I think he's in the mix. Number five?
Mike Tomlin's the next one. I gave him five. I have nice. Him. He's got 125 wins. He's 66. Now, look, the Steelers are 57 wins in the last 5 years, which is second only to the Patriots. I mean, you can Mike Tomlin's a lot like Andy Reid. You know, now he's 10-6 in the playoffs, but there's details. The non-obvious slips through Mike Tomlin, but could you imagine if he could button some things up, how good of a coach he could really be? If he could just button some things up, like game management, timeouts, the way he does it, I think he would be. So that's my fifth. Now, the sixth one, this is where I think it gets, there's a little bit of a, you could make the case for Doug Peterson, Super Bowl winner. You could make the case for, you know, I think Mike Zimmer's a hell of a coach. He's got 47 wins. You know, Rob
Go with McVay. Go with the flashy young guy, McVay.
I'm going to go with
McVay. Yeah, I like it.
I had him six. And I know he only has 24 wins. He's 2-2 in the playoffs. He appeared in the Super Bowl. I mean, Peterson's got 29 wins and 19. He's 4-1. Peterson's record in the postseason is 4-1. That's pretty impressive. I mean, when you look at it, I mean, Jason Garrett's 2-3 in the playoffs. He's got 77 wins. The guy that's – here's the one that's interesting. Gruden is 99-93, 5-4 in the playoffs.
Wow. A 500 coach across the board. Yet you would think, if you just asked me, I'd say got to be at least 60% win percentage.
You would think so, right? I mean, he's a 500 coach. I mean, 99-93.
Wow.
I mean, that's
he's getting paid $10 million a year.
I mean, that's Billy Martin.
Yeah.
In baseball. Sure. When Billy Martin would give a little spark to your team, but then at some point just doesn't quite cash in. It's going to be really interesting because the words you're hearing out of that place are from players that are there talking to other players that I talk to. It hasn't really been like, oh my God, they got it turned around the corner. It's going to be interesting to see. But those are my six. Is there any, like John Harbaugh has got 104 wins and he's 10-6 in the playoffs. Hard not to put it's hard not to put him six, but it's hard to put him six.
Here's why I like McVay at six, because you know all these NFL front officers are saying, what? We got to get another McVay. We got to find a young workaholic guy who the players can relate to, who's smart, innovative offensively, high motor. Like, whenever people are saying, we got to get the next McVay, that proves that the guy's a stud.
That's right.
That, to me, that holds currency.
Yeah, no doubt. And, I mean, look, when you break down the teams that score points last year, okay, the number one team, this is just without the defense or special teams contributing. The number one team in scoring points was Kansas City offensively. Number two was New Orleans. Number three were the Rams. Number four was Indy, who I think Frank Reich's going to be a really good coach. I think he might be a next up-and-comer. Seattle was the next team at 415 points. You know where the Bears were last year with just offensive points? 11th.
Where? Wow. You would have thought Nagy, offensive guy, come on, Trubisky for MVP? No.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's what I think the point is, if you're going to make that bet, that's bothered me all week, is I still think if you had $500 to spare and you just said, hey, I want to spend it, I would take five quarterbacks, none of them being Mitchell Trubisky, and bet on the MVP. Because what other race do you know that truly that there's no chance? Like, I saw somebody had Saquon Barkley as the MVP in the league. Are you fucking kidding me? Seriously, Saquon Barkley. How is Saquon Barkley going to be the MVP of the league?
Right. The team stinks. He might get 1,600 yards, but who cares? The team sucks.
Right.
How can you get MVP to the team?
I can go down to this beach down here on Seacrest, and somebody's going to – that would be like a fan. Like, I read that on Twitter. Somebody actually thinks Saquon Barkley's a can. Are you kidding me? How can that possibly be? What running back gets it, right? What running back?
Running backs don't get it anyways. You're right. The whole theory would be he's so good, he would lift the Giants to the playoffs, which is a mirage. They're not even going to make
Barry Sanders couldn't lift the Barry Sanders couldn't lift the Lions. I mean, right. when do we stop talking about running backs carrying teams?
Right.
Like it's at some point, when do we stop it? It's just so, I mean, you know there's only five positions that you could possibly ever use. I just don't understand it.
Another topic, we can do this next time if you want, because I know you're talking about ranking coordinators. Because what I love is, let's do that next time. I want to hear your top five defensive coordinators, because I think that's a fascinating topic. Those guys who are not great head coaches, but just great at coaching defense. Right. Wade Phillips is just great at coaching defense.
Don Martindale at the Ravens. I mean, you know, there's a crusty guy. I don't know how Don Martindale, I don't know how Matt LaFleur and some of these other guys got head coaching jobs over him. But, you know, that's the problem is he can't coach the quarterback.
Yeah, and Fangio, great defensive coordinator of the Bears, now he's going to get that chance with Denver. I don't know if he can do it, but
I think
he's
Denver's a sleeper team. I really do. I think Denver's one of those teams that's going to surprise people because they're going to be really tough minded. They're going to be like Minnesota with Zimmer on defense. Look, if Fangio wins and Zimmer wins, at some point, some of these teams, some of these owners, and these guys that call themselves executives in the NFL are going to say, wait, we should hire a defensive coach.
Yeah.
Maybe we should. The greatest coach of all time is a defensive coach.
Right. Figure it out. What do you got on Gronk? I know you want to talk about Gronk. What's the latest with
him? You know, people made an outrage. People were going crazy today about Gronk playing catch with Brady. I mean, Gronk's lost like 15, 20 pounds. If you watch Gronk last year closely, like Gronk couldn't separate from people last year. Gronk was more involved in the passing, in the running game than he was in the passing game. Like, I don't think, you see, this notion that you can turn it off and on in the NFL, like, the NFL requires preparation. The NFL requires deadlifts. It requires squats. It requires things for your lower body. You just can't come into the NBA and say, okay, I'm ready to play. Like, I mean, do I think he could come back in October? Yeah. Do I think he'll be effective? Probably not. I think it's hard. I think you lose weight. You don't have the strength. When he started the season last year, you go back and rewatch the Eric Berry, when Eric Berry dominated him at the line of scrimmage. He couldn't get away. He couldn't get away. Now, I'm sure Brady's going to recruit the shit out of him to play, but I just don't see that as happening. I really don't.
All right, so that's what could happen with Gronk. A couple more topics before we get the NBA. Blue chip ratings and how to grade a team. What do you got here?
Well, I think what you have to do is when you're sitting here studying the teams for over and unders, I think it comes down to how many blue chip and red chip players you have in both offensive and defensive lines. I think that's ultimately how you bet on teams and how you bet on games and who can impact. Like if the Browns are good next year, it'll be because Olivier Vernon and Myles Garrett really turned it on, and Sheldon Richardson, all of them became blue chip players. Like, we know Garrett's a blue chip player. Vernon could be. Can he become one? I think that's going to be the problem. And I think you got to grade the offensive line. Like, for example, the Raiders. Everybody's talking about the Raiders. Do you realize Tom Cable's pass protections in his offensive line is always in the bottom 20 of the league? I mean, seriously, Tom Cable's has got a reputation of this being a great offensive line coach. Warren Sharp talks about it in his great book, you know, where he talks about that he has them graded all in the bottom. Like pass protection by the teams that Cable's been with, it's remarkable. I mean, they're always in the bottom 20. So if you're going to take a team like that and you're going to look at their line, you're going to say, okay, Derek Carr is behind a team that – has bad offensive line protection. Does that mean that Trent Brown automatically gets better? Well, it didn't happen in Seattle. When he left Seattle, they got better in pass protection.
Right. It's amazing to think about. You're right. In terms of grading, it's misleading because you're right. If you heard Tom Cable's name, that's the only thing I would know about him. I'm like, was it failure as a head coach, but great offensive line guy.
Great line. Everybody thinks he's a great line coach, but when you really break down the numbers, and that's where you got to break down the blue chip and red chip players. And then it lets you to go in. Next week, we'll talk about the coaches more, but I think it really lets you into that to understand that they're not that's not going to happen. Like everybody assumes because the Raiders signed Trent Brown and the Raiders signed other players that they're going to turn this offensive line around. Well, the evidence isn't in the players. The evidence has been in the coach, hasn't been able to do it anywhere he's been.
Right. That's a concern. Speaking of stars and major names, NBA big trades and impacts. Let's recap Kawhi Leonard. So he helped keep Duncan Young, got another title with the Spurs, brings a title to Toronto, first time ever for that country. Now he goes and he just saved the NBA because he could have gone to the Lakers and colluded with LeBron and Anthony Davis. Instead, he goes, I'll go to the other LA team. I'm going to go take on LeBron. And oh, by the way, I'll get Paul George to come and the Clippers will give up a ton of draft picks. But to your point, which you made about Anthony Davis, basically the Clippers just said, okay, go ahead and draft somebody great. We'll give you all the picks in the world. We got Paul George as the guy we needed to get Kawhi Leonard. And that's my whole thing. When everyone can kept saying, man, you gave up a lot of picks for Paul George. No, you didn't. You gave up those picks for Paul George and for Kawhi, because Kawhi ain't coming unless you get George. So that's why
Kawhi
it makes
didn't
sense.
Come free. He didn't come free. I mean, he just didn't come for the 142. He came for, you know, the thing I found fascinating about this whole thing was how quickly Oklahoma City has now gone from potentially trying to compete for a title to now they're in full rebuild mode. And the players determined it. Sam Presti didn't say, okay, I'm going to rebuild. Like, he let Alec Burke, who he signed to a contract. Think about this. Could you imagine me walking into Al Davis's office and said, we just signed Alec Burke and, you know, we're going to let him, we're not going to sign the contract because we're not competing anymore. We should just let him go. Right? Could you imagine what he would have done to me on that? Like, the players have such control in the NBA on whether we're going to rebuild, whether we're going to contend. You know, I'm with you. I think all those picks, with the exception, and I'm not sure that Miami pick that the Sixers traded or Phoenix traded to the Sixers and the Sixers traded to Miami and the Miami trade, you know, like, I'm not sure all that is really going to pan. I think they're all going to be picks in the 20.
Right. Especially if you're a good team, exactly what you just said, those picks are low anyway. So how many times have you seen a low first runner end up being a star? Not often. Maybe a rotation player, but not a star.
I think what they should do in the NBA is grade the evaluators. I think they should grade the evaluators. Because I think what they're saying is there's only about five or six people that can really evaluate in the league. Like, we're going to see it in this draft. There's probably somebody picked in between 20 and 40 that turns out to be a good player. It happens in the NFL. I mean, look, Brady's a six-round pick. Somebody didn't evaluate very well. It happens more in basketball than you think. I mean, some of these guys teams are coveting after weren't even picked. I mean, some were like, Patrick Beverley was, what, the 40th pick? He just signed a huge deal. You know, nobody talks about that. Nobody talks about these guys. It takes player development, and I think that even though they have the G League, I'm happy he went to the Clippers. I'm happy for Lawrence Frank. I'm happy for that whole organization because I think at least – can you imagine having 82 games at the Staples Center now this year?
Oh, my God. Lakers, no matter what, you're getting LeBron or Kawhi or Paul George or Anthony Davis.
You're getting something. Now, where do you think Westbrook ends up?
Well, here's the other part of it, too. You're right. Oklahoma City, what an indictment on Westbrook. Like, Durant was like, get me the hell out of here. Paul George is like, get me the hell out of here. Like, I don't want to play with this guy. Right? Indictment that is on
everybody
Westbrook.
Everybody denies it, but nobody wants to stay.
No, like, nobody can stand the guy. Like, well, I don't want to play with this ball hog who's arrogant and a pain in the ass. I'll just go somewhere else.
Well, I mean, if he goes to Miami, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I mean, does he go to Phoenix? Does he go to Miami? I'm sure everybody's going to have him going to Houston because Houston has the greatest PR machine going, so I'm sure everybody's going to put him in Houston.
Well, people love Daryl Morey. They say he's so smart. He's like a stats head. They say he's kind of like baseball with the sabermetrics and stuff. But meantime, he said he was going to trade everybody, and then all of a sudden they're like, actually, we might kind of hang in here.
Yeah.
Before he was like, he was going to trade Chris Paul. Now, like, well, you know what? We might have a chance now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. I think it's really, to me, when he said, I'm doing it, and they were waiting. And I love the fact that everybody was thinking he was waiting on a decision. What I love the most is nobody knew what he was doing in the background. I think Jason Whitlock was the only guy that kind of said he was waiting. Now, Whitlock never said it was Paul George. But Whitlock said he was probably that's really astute by him. I mean, he's right. George was up to something. It wasn't about I want to go to LA or I don't. Did you what did you make of the Magic? Weren't they upset with Magic about something?
Yeah, well, originally they got mad at Magic Johnson when he obviously quit on the team, but then he was still kind of involved with the recruiting, which is crazy.
And then they said he leaked something and it pissed them all off.
Right, which I was like, I don't understand. Like, what a bizarre situation. Magic's one of the all-time great Lakers, and yet somehow he's pissed off the team that should love him. And I mean, what a mess that Lakers team is.
I think the Lakers could be a 30 for 30. Like, this whole LeBron at the Lakers could be – there's a story behind it. Yeah, there's got to be absolutely. This whole, I mean, with especially with Magic and the trades they don't make. And
right. It's a mess. I'm glad you mentioned Lawrence Frank, though. But how many people would have been able to say the name Lawrence Frank? Who's running the Clippers if you asked them a week ago? Nobody had any idea. Yeah. And all of a sudden, Lawrence Frank's executive of the year.
Yeah, I mean, he has Jerry West in there and his general manager. I mean, I went over and spent a day with them after I wrote Gridiron Genius. And they all talked about how, you know, football and basketball, I mean, they're grinders. And I mean, I think Lawrence is one of those guys that tries to keep things underneath wraps, because I know he was always concerned about stuff that gets out. Like, I don't understand how people run their operation the way Houston does, where they tell everybody what they're doing. Like, I don't know how that works.
Information sharing. Who knows? Last thought, on a serious note, former Patriots linebacker Teddy Bruschi, of course, I worked at the ESPN, great guy, unfortunately suffered his second stroke. The good news is that Teddy was smart enough to see the symptoms coming and got help right away and apparently should have a full recovery. But obviously, just a great guy, a terrific football player. We wish him nothing but the best.
Yeah, we wish him well. I mean, that, you know, for have two strokes, I mean, I can still remember Teddy. To me, my fondest memory of Teddy Bruschi was when he played at the University of Arizona and Jonathan Ogden was coming out. And he rushed against Jonathan Ogden better than anybody I've ever seen. Now, Jonathan Ogden could have – there was about – he could have put a fit about three Teddy Bruschis in Jonathan Ogden. But he rushed him really impressively. And the way he ended up becoming a player who could play on his feet truly is remarkable. I mean, I hope he recovers. I hope he can keep working. Hope he can keep doing things because, I mean, that's too young to have a stroke.
Absolutely. Two strokes, as you mentioned, is very, very scary. So wish him nothing but the best. Thanks, as always, to everybody for listening. Subscribe, rate, review, GM Shuffle. We'll talk coordinators next time around. Anything else you want to plug, Mike? Speaking engagements, where are you going to be?
No, I'm going to be here. I got to go talk to the Baylor football team tomorrow. Then I'm going to go down to Washington. I've got a meeting with a couple senators who read the book, which I'm excited for.
Oh,
very interesting. No affiliation. I have no. I'm just happy to talk to them. And and then I'm headed out to Las Vegas next week for VSiN, and I'm going to host.
That's right. Let's say congrats. You're part of the football coverage now,
I'm going to host the VSiN football coverage out there next week. Mitch and Paulie's show, which you can see on NESN in the morning, and MSG. So I'm excited for it.
That's great, man. Good stuff as always. We'll see.
Same
you next
to you.
Time.
What do we got, Cinephile? What are we doing there?
Cinephile, we're talking. There's a new movie called The Art of Self Defense. It's about this character who gets beat up. He's kind of bullied a little bit, so he learns karate to try to defend himself. I'm talking to the director this week. Jesse Eisenberg's the actor, but the director I'm speaking doing Cinephile. So also just saw Spider-Man with my brother and my boys. Fantastic. I mean, you look at the great superheroes of all time. Spider-Man, I mean, he's Mount Rushmore. I'm more of a Batman guy. My brother's more of a Spider-Man guy. With this Spider-Man, good special effects, entertaining, really well done.
I love Batman. I can't, I mean, I still, if I see a Batman, the 60s show on TV, I'm not changing the channel. I got to be honest. And I know they're going to be able to save themselves and all that. I just love the gadgets. I love all the things that have come true. Google Maps, you know, the Batmap, all that stuff. Hey, have you seen Once Upon a Time? Have you seen the new Quentin Tarantino movie? Is it out yet?
No, it's coming out July 26th. I can't wait. I saw the trailer again last night for the Spider-Man movie. It looks fantastic.
And then one other thing. How about the Roger Ailes on Showtime? Have you watched that yet?
I haven't. A friend of mine just texted me. Said it's great. Russell Crowe said he's going to win an Emmy playing Roger Ailes. Unbelievable.
I can't wait. Well, have a great week.
Thanks, Mike. We'll talk to you.
Bye-bye.